Hello, and welcome to episode 156 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week, the creator of the brilliant webcomic, Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello. It's me. Hello.
You jumped in before I even said your name.
Came in too early.
This is Dan Butcher. Say hello, Dan.
Hello.
Oh, he's eager tonight, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's full of enthusiasm, and we have to be, because Our Lady of Luxury, also known as Tony Esmond, is on holiday this week. And, yeah, we tried to get him in for this call, but technical issues and all that, so we'd rather him just enjoy his time off, because he works too damn hard, doesn't he, Dan?
Yeah. He non-stop,
yeah.
Tony.
Yeah.
Work.
Yeah, so he's out there with his banana hammock, just basically causing a fuss.
On the banana boat.
Yep. It's just all about bananas, isn't it, really? Somewhere Christian Wild Goose is going, no, not more bananas. Anyway, Tony may not be here, but we do have a guest. Yes. This week we're joined by a creator who's responsible for the heavy metal splatterfest that is Rock in Purgatory and the current webcomic Heads. He was also the brains behind the great Wimbledon Comic Art Festival that happened in 2017. So it's our pleasure to welcome Rick Jackson to the show. Hello, Rick.
Hello, fellas. How you doing?
Doing all right?
Doing good.
Already, he's quite charming. All right, he sounds like a smooth operator, Rick, doesn't he? Immediately. Hi, fellas. How you doing?
Should we do the complaining about the weather bit first?
Let's get this out of the weather. Out of the way. Because here in the UK, as it stands, this is July the 1st, isn't it? Is that the date today, as we record?
And, I think so.
It's been quite hot this year, hasn't it?
I don't do my best work in the heat, it has to be said. It's a real struggle to draw.
Well, I must say, I'm the same. What I also don't expect is lots of men just flashing their topless torsos at me before I even record a podcast.
I accidentally pressed the video call and Vince got the gun show, full gun show.
I'll tell you what. Whew. It's going to take me a while. If it wasn't hot enough already, the temperature gauge certainly went through the roof.
You had steam shooting out your collar, etc.
Shooting out your what?
Yeah. Bow tie spinning around, etc.
Yep.
Is that another euphemism?
Yeah, that's another euphemism.
What is it about the UK that as soon as any bit of sunshine comes up, like, men just get their tops off?
Yeah. I'm not one to do it in public, in the street, you know what I mean? I don't get that.
Just at home, yeah? Just behind closed doors.
With the webcam on.
Topless down the off licence, down on the estate.
Yeah.
I'm not making any lifestyle
Well,
judgments,
you know, but... just do whatever makes you happy, as long as you're not hurting anyone else. We've already started the show like a bunch of grumpy old men. We notice this. Oh, it's too hot. What is it with topless people? Oh dear, who knows how this week's going to go? And like, Tony's not even here. Can you imagine? Yeah.
Give me his element.
Oh dear. Now Rick's here and he's going to be talking about all things comics with us this week in just a bit.
That's bold, all things.
All things. All comics, great and small. But do you know where you can find pretty much most of the comics in the world?
Yeah, I do.
Good for you, Dan. Yes, it's our time for a badly presented...
Oh, it's the Comic House segue.
What did you think I was going to talk about? Yes, it's the brutal Comic House segue. Yes, our sponsors, Comic House. Yay!
Yay, Comic House.
Thanks, Dan. Do you know what? I really appreciate it.
I got up the energy. It's the heat sapping it. But...
Yeah, where else can you get heat? And that's certainly in Comic House. Yes, where Comic Comic House. Don't make noises like that throughout this show, Dan, because I don't know how I'll react. Oh yeah. Now, Comic House is the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a huge selection of titles on their database, and if you self-publish, then you can list your book on there for free. And when you sell a copy, Comic House will only take 1 pence commission, which is pretty awesome in the self-publishing world, where every penny counts. But as well as that, they have a featured section, and they only have their own app as well. Bloody hell. Will we ever have our own app one day?
I hope not. You never know what will happen.
Yeah, that's very true. God knows what it would be like. It'd be like Snapchat, but no, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Nah.
Yes, and on the app, it's like Netflix for comics. And for only £3 a month, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. Dan, what great stuff can they find on there?
On the latest update, you've got Ghost Island, Future Quake, The Dark, The Fang, The Murder Club, Something Wicked, The Undoubtables, The Interactives, and Cadavers. There's a lot of theirs.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's a lot of their comics. Is that in this year? Is that like the fashionable thing, the?
The, I guess so. I'd rename mine to The Vanguard.
The Vanguard. It wouldn't work.
I think that's
probably
copyright already.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
The Red Mask. You already got it covered.
It is the Red Mask from Mars. Oh my God! See, I've been going for a few years, so I was ahead of the curve.
blazing the trail.
Yeah.
Their comics.
Before stopping for a while before issue 4 comes out. Stop bugging me, people. It's happening. It's going to happen. Jesus. Yes. So you've got those great comics that you can get on Comic House. So to find out more and start your 14-day free trial, and if you want to dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press we talk about every week, then you should definitely go to comichouse.com. And if you're listening to this show thinking, blimey, that was a bit more prepared in what Vince was saying, you're absolutely right. I had a script this week. So it'll probably sound exactly the same next week.
So, look forward to that, listeners.
Be like, spot the difference, see where I mess up each week. Yes, but without further ado, let's bring Rick in. Welcome, Rick. What do you think of the place?
It's great. I love the fact that we've all got our shirts off and that we're just sort of.
Hey, yeah, I've got my shirt.
You're letting the side down then, Vince. What's going on? Come on. It's bloody hot. You were going on about it.
He's gone for the opposite, where we've got our shirts off and our bottoms on.
I'm basically like Winnie the Pooh.
And there's the bar. What's really annoying is I'm sitting here, I've got some Winnie the Pooh stuff that's going to go in my son's room, and it's actually sitting on my floor at the moment in front of me. I just cast an eye across there, and now it's just Vince with his nub out, as far as I'm concerned. That'd be nice. Putting the boys to bed. Euphemism. That's me putting the kids to bed.
Yeah.
Popping the boys to bed. There you go. Winnie the Pooh on the wall. Their childhoods. Thanks, fellas.
Unbelievable. I thought I was going to be less picked on this week, but so much for that.
whatever you made you think that?
I don't know. Every week I just hope. Yeah. But every week we make comics, we read comics, and we do all sorts of things involving comics, which sounds really wrong. Now that I've read that bit wasn't scripted. That's why it sounds so wrong. But yeah, we've got Rick. Go on.
I also managed to get Peter Cimetti to retweet our awesome comics thing. So, hooray!
Yes,
that's good, isn't it?
You've been doing a bit of video work, haven't you, Dan?
Yeah, I've been trying to get into that After Effects, and I noticed Chris Jenkins doing the Reckless Hero on the Kickstarter. He's been doing that himself, and it's an interesting program to kind of get your head around. A lot of differences from. I've only been used to doing like Illustrator, Photoshop, and InDesign, so it's similar but different.
Does it follow the same sort of structure? Because a lot of like Adobe like programs, they work in conjunction with each other, don't they?
Very similar, but it's kind of because you're dealing with video. It's there's a few little things you got to get your head around. And the shortcut keys are completely different, which obviously is video, not graphics. But they work together. It's a lot easier. Like I've been doing this course on to learn it online, and there's big sections where I've not really bothered doing it because it starts talking about like blending modes and stuff. It's like, well, I know what screen overlay and multiply do.
Yeah.
So I can kind of jump past them. But it's interesting.
I mean, when it comes to stuff like that, do you think you should sort of just learn what you need to learn and then anything else is just extra rather than going for the deep dive?
Yeah, I've been looking into it and there's stuff you can do like chroma key and camera matching and so much stuff. I'm not going in that deep.
Yeah, because I wonder this, like, across the board, and not just like obviously video editing programs and stuff. And I'm sure a lot of people pick up InDesign for the first time, you know, when they're putting together a comic, and you know how far. When you're starting to put stuff together, how much do you need to learn? Do you know what I mean? Because if you start from the beginning, you could be learning stuff that isn't really that helpful to you and you don't really need, you know, straight away. So you could be wasting time on this when you could be learning the important stuff. Don't you think?
Well, for instance, on part of the day job, like I might have to lay out brochures or catalogues and stuff. So kind of the level of kind of how much you need to know InDesign certainly goes up. Like, using the style sheets and stuff to change things across the board and shit like that. But when you're kind of essentially maybe lettering comics or just laying it out so it can be put to PDF, you don't really need to know that much. Like you said, there's a very limited scope you can get your head around and you're good to go.
I think with the sort of YouTube and things, you can literally just focus on what you want to learn in that particular program, don't you?
Yeah, I think if you kind of know a bit of the Adobe programs, you can kind of work your way through it. If you've got no experience, that's when I think it might be a bit trickier.
Like, Rick, when you were putting together your books, like, initially, like, how steep was the learning curve? I mean, working with design programs, is that something you were au fait with, or did you have to learn from, like, step one?
Well, I was really rusty on that sort of thing, so I hadn't done anything like that in yonks. My old job was actually working in like TV post-production. So I used to be like a video editor and DVD author, and I do graphics and stuff like that as well. So actually, like, all the stuff you're saying about like After Effects and whatever, that was stuff I did ages ago. And you're right, I mean, if you don't know what you're doing with Photoshop, you can pretty much just not bother with learning something like After Effects, because it's all the same kind of principles behind it. But I hadn't really touched any stuff like that in ages, and when it came to like putting the books together, it was a massive steep curve to try and get my head around all that kind of stuff again. So because it's incredible just how much changes, just the subtle nuances of the programs, and even just like just where things are, stuff like that. Like when you're just looking for things in a toolbar, if it's just another version that you've not touched ever, and they've just had a bit of a facelift.
Yeah,
it can just baffle the hell out of you. So I pretty much had to just start from scratch again and learn all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it can be. And I know there's a lot of people who are probably listening that are starting it, that it is like it's an alien planet, isn't it, when you start looking into those programs. I mean, for me personally, and like much like Dan, like I work in the design and print field, but I sort of learnt on the job, as it were. I've never been really one for sort of technical manuals or, you know, YouTube tutorials or stuff like that. I mean, I try to if there's really specific things. I mean, my current thing at the moment is, eventually I want to get an iPad Pro, so I'm looking at videos of like how to make, you know, draw comics on Procreate and stuff. And that's a program that I know nothing about, so I'll be in that sort of like the deep end from step one again.
I mean, I find it frustrating going from stuff like Photoshop where I know it like the back of my hand, and then going into something like After Effects and you kind of, I want to do this but I don't know how to fucking do it, and it's frustrating. You want to go a lot faster than you are, and you're kind of quite slowed down because you got to, like Rick says, that like, oh, where's that live on the fucking menu and all shit like that. It's interesting. I'm keeping looking into the program because I'm quite interested what you can do with it.
Go on, Rick.
No, I was going to say, the way I've always got around stuff like that as well, it's like you were saying, it's like learning the bits that you need to learn, but almost like sort of doing just little random projects as well, isn't it? Instead of starting kind of throwing something in that you know, right, okay, this is massive, I know exactly what it's going to do from the start to the end, there's all these other elements to it, and you get like 10 minutes into trying to do that and you're like, fucking hell, what am I doing? I just can't find anything. Whereas if you just kind of go, right, just get someone to suggest something utterly ridiculous, just dead simple. Like, well, I think the first thing I ever did in After Effects was I animated just a dog. I just found like a JPEG of a dog, and I made his legs move like they were on pins, and just made him walk up and down pyramids. Just randomly found it. So I was like, I need to know how something moves. I need to get something going. I was like, fucking hell, let's just make a dog walk somewhere. And I was like, well, if I'm making walk just in a straight line, bloody chimp could do that. Let's give him the pyramids. And so I had this. had this like English bull terrier that had like pin legs, and it just ran up and down the pyramids. And it took me days. Yeah. 15 days did it. And it looks like shit. But by the end of it, I knew where all the layers went. I knew how to put all my positions, my angles in there and everything. And yeah, how all the drags worked and stuff like that.
That's the comic creator mindset, though, I think. No matter what you're doing, like whether it be the art or the writing or anything, no one ever sort of like really shortchanges himself or goes for the easy fix. They just sort of think, right, I want to put out a comic this year, and I want it to have horses in it. Yeah, that'd be good. Horses and cathedrals.
In regards to like you're kind of promoting your comic on social media, it used to be like you're tweeting, for example, putting an image where your tweet would get you a lot more interaction than one without.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to investigate whether putting kind of an animated banner will get more attention than a still image. I imagine it would.
Yeah.
But I feel like kind of, putting a little animated GIF to kind of get them to Joe Blogs to click your link and see what it's about might work better than the still image.
Yeah, because
to be fair, Dan, your ones that you're doing at the moment that you're putting out, just with the little light that sort of goes around the edge.
Yeah.
If nothing else, they stand out. I've noticed, because I'm like sort of scrolling through and whatever, and just the fact that it's doing something else. If I happen to miss, it's you. I'm like, oh, what's that? Like, oh,
yeah.
It's Vanguard, brilliant. So yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of the fact that I'm already like looking for that sort of thing anyway, but it's amongst all the other stuff that's kind of going, hey, click my link, click my comic. Yeah. And yours is kind of just,
I'm glad it's working.
Well, I saw it anyway, so
yeah. I mean, moving on from that though, do you think like color works into it, you know, as well? If it was just black and white, like a black and white panel over like a full color panel, you know, what do you think the turnover is in terms of like people checking out the work?
I don't know.
It's hard to tell. I can't really get. I mean, we certainly live in a world, especially with this show, you can't really tell from week to week what people's tastes are. And that's the same with conventions. That's the same with comics. I think we live in a very uncertain world. I don't think there's anything where you think, I'm going to go to this show and completely sell out of everything. It keeps you on your toes.
You just gotta try stuff out, don't you?
Yeah.
Half the problem is sitting around thinking too much about what might or might not work without actually doing something about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're saying about black and white against colour. I mean, I can tell you for kickoff, I mean, I've just done Rock and Purgatory for the last couple of years, and it's full colour, as garish as humanly possible. I like to think it'll grab your attention with the colours and the images that I've got in there.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And then I've got Heads at the moment, which is a black and white noir comic, completely the polar opposite of it, but I don't really see a lot of difference in the engagement when I'm putting images out there. So it's got to be something to do with what people are interested in. I couldn't tell you, obviously, when you boil it down to looking at stats, I couldn't tell you if it's the same people who liked Rock and Purgatory like Heads or not. Other than when you see there's a few of the same people who sort of follow my work, that's great. But they're a handful of people that are like very, very engaged with me, and they seek out the opportunity to speak to me. But when it's just a case of looking at click-throughs and looking at impressions on social media and stuff, it's on par. So I think it's really just to do with you'll spend too much time trying to predict it. I mean, there's various marketing techniques and research techniques that you could do, but at the same time as well, if you've got a certain type of thing that you're trying to promote to people, there's only so many ways you can twist it and turn it. I mean, I wouldn't be able to like turn Heads into some. I wouldn't be able to plaster it with like pink and yellow all over it just because they have to be colours that a market research company tells me will attract people's eye, because it won't be the same fucking comic, will it? So.
Yeah.
One thing I don't kind of get too heavily involved in, like looking at the analytics stuff, because I think to myself, I'm a creative, I don't do that. But then I wonder, am I saying that to myself as a get out, not to put in the legwork to get more involved in that? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like so much you've got to create the comic, but there's got to be a certain amount of pushing it and getting people to read it, or trying to get, not even getting people to read it, trying to get people to notice so they can have the opportunity to read it, because there's so much out there.
Yeah,
it's a tricky one, because there's buildings full of people all over the world trying to flog you stuff on social media.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job of theirs, and when you're doing it like for, I don't know, an hour a week trying to push your own stuff,
Yeah.
Less of bloody ice skating uphill.
It's something that I need to get better at, is just getting the word out there. I mean, obviously, we've got the nice people that follow us and like our work, yeah, etc. And those people are fantastic and we'll love them forever. But then, you know, how do you move beyond that, you know, beyond the retweet, as it were? How do you get your work into fresh new eyes? And it's always been difficult for me to do the ultra important self promotion. And I think there are some fantastic examples of that in the small press, people that, you know, do it well. I mean, like Matt Garvey, we always like have a laugh about him, but he's a brilliant salesman, and like, you know,
yeah, definitely,
he definitely he's got that sort of Mark Miller sort of mold to the way, like, you know, promotion and, you know, positivity. I think because some people like probably have bad, you know, have their opinions on Mark Miller, but I don't see him say anything negative about people. He's always shouting about good things. And I think if you put
I tried to take on the other Intelvin brothers' advice last week and try and be a bit more positive on social media, which I've tried to be this week, as opposed to this saying, "Oh, look at this load of shit," which is usually the words that come to my lips almost immediately whenever I see something.
But how has that experiment gone down?
Have you just not tweeted all week?
Yeah, I just not tweeted it. I still thought it, but I just tried not to tweet it.
Oh, and it's so easy as well, isn't it? Because I think I tweeted at one point, right, I'm not going to say any negative things now or give my opinion, you know, my dour opinion on a movie trailer or something, because I just want to talk about the positive things. But it's so tempting as soon as you see something you don't like, you just got to go, look at this shit, isn't it?
But that said, I spent a bit of time with Matt Strott yesterday crapping on The Last Jedi, so I can recant that immediately.
But was it publicly or was it over like direct message?
Oh no, it's a few back and forths, but it was all public, so there we go. Didn't even last a week.
Yeah, it's difficult though, isn't it? Especially with this this culture that we've chosen to follow, I think.
Yeah.
And plus, we're all miserable bastards.
Yeah. Oh, on the positive side, I went to see that Hereditary today, and that's great.
Is that
I really
good?
Enjoyed that. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
I really like. I've heard as many people say that as they have just gone, Jesus, what the hell was that all about?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. It's, I always hate that, because I mean, you get all these things with it, like horror movies, particularly scariest movie in a generation.
Oh
Jesus, is it really? And it's just, you get so much crap on social media, don't you? Of people either sort of going on about it as like it's the second fucking coming, or just shitting all over it. It's like, oh man, I just want to see it myself, and I'll have my own opinion, thanks.
A lot of people were kind of defined a good horror film by how many jump scares are in it, which I don't. I want that kind of pervasive, creepy atmosphere, and that's what this film does. It's got like one or two jump scares in it, but they're not overused, and it's generally, it's just got that kind of fucked up atmosphere going on.
I know it came out, obviously there was a lot of fanfare building up to it, and when it came out there was a lot of sort of backlash to it. And it's one of those things where I think marketing played a big part in how the public sort of reacted to it. Because you have a film, and this probably works, you know, never mind Hereditary, this probably works across the board, but if you have anything, like a horror thing, and you say, it's the new Exorcist, or it's the scariest film since The Exorcist, and you put essentially this huge pillar, or it's a stone around its neck, that when people walk into that thinking, they're thinking of that film, they're thinking of this major, a classic, something like The Exorcist, which is an absolute horror classic, and they're immediately going to set themselves up for failure, aren't they? Because some people will also think in the really simplistic terms of they think that film is going to be like The Exorcist. Does that make sense as well?
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a certain responsibility that I think reviewers and marketing people have that they're sort of letting themselves down sometimes. I think.
It's a bit of a lazy go-to, isn't it, when you sort of say, just like X.
And I am the king of lazy go-tos, trust me, because especially with like artwork in comics, it's very easy, and I'm going to say in a book I'm going to talk about later, I'm going to make a comparison. I do make these sort of comparisons because it's like, oh, this artwork reminded me of such and such.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you're kind of like shouting about a big studio film and you say, oh, it's scarier than The Exorcist or something like that, you kind of, I don't know. I think you're doing a bit of a disservice to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think sometimes they don't look at what the thing is as an individual sort of product by itself, because obviously I'm not going to get in the debate of Ant-Man and the Wasp coming out later. I've had my moment. Thank you to everyone for your support. but it had it's been reviewed in Empire, I think. And in the review, they made sort of comparisons to like Infinity War and like Black Panther, and saying, you know, it's not the same as that. It doesn't work as well as that. Blah blah blah. And I think to myself, why are you? It's a completely different thing. It's not what it's meant.
Yeah.
You know, why do they think because it's a comic book movie, because it's a Marvel movie, and because Infinity War was this such a concrete sort of theme that they think everything's going to be like
that? I want totally different films.
Yeah.
I don't want every Marvel film to be exactly the same, because
yeah,
that'd be the way to bloody kill it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want something.
You don't want them super serious all the time. You want a bit of kind of bit comedy, a bit light.
Yeah. Yeah. So I imagine that the sort of critical reception for Ant-Man will be fairly lukewarm. They'll enjoy it, but it'll be lukewarm. I'll probably absolutely love it. I think I'm going to absolutely love it. So it probably won't give me PTSD like Infinity War did, but that's that's another story.
So comic-wise, Rick, you mentioned you're doing that. Well, tell us a bit about Rock and Purgatory.
Rock and Purgatory, all right then.
Where do you begin?
Where do you fucking begin on that one? It's basically just me killing off rock stars in the most gory, stupid ways possible just for a fucking laugh.
Fair enough.
There's literally nothing subversive in there. It's just, it does what it says on the tin.
That's pretty subversive.
I don't know. It's just, I just fancy doing it for a laugh, basically. It started off as just some one pagers that I was knocking about with, expanded those a little bit. But I just love horror. I love heavy metal and I love comics. And it took me probably far too long to realise, oh, you could probably stick them all together, mate.
What was it published in? Was it, because obviously you collected it at one point?
But... I got involved in a few horror movie websites a couple of years ago, and one of them, called Popcorn Horror, started to put out a digital magazine.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Bi-monthly indie horror magazine, and I just literally just rocked up to them and went, "Do you want a comic?" And I went, "Yeah, go on then." And that was that. So it became a beautiful friendship. I'd had this idea that I was going to do Rock and Purgatory anyway, and it just coincided with when they were launching their digital magazine. Yeah. And I thought, well, yeah, bollocks, let's do it, because it's not going to work, is it? I mean, they were putting it out on a sort of sliding scale on PayHip, just pay what you want. And they weren't expecting to make any money out of it. So it was all just a case of a shit ton of creators, reviewers, interviewers, all just getting together, chucking in their £2 for that. And then you got a magazine out of it. And then they, with the influence, I hate saying that, but you know what I mean, that they have by being a pre-existing website that's very well revered, they just put it out there and we all sort of shared in the wealth, so to speak.
So what was the sort of feedback from something like that then? Because that's quite interesting, because you're going to an audience that isn't the convention, it's not the comic book format, what was that like, you know, feedback wise?
It was a very slow trickle to start with, because what I chose to do, though, was because it was all still creator-owned, and there was no kind of contract and license behind it particularly. It was just a case of I was letting them use it for that. That was it. Great. Yeah. So they were putting it out in their magazine, but then I followed one behind on my website. So I would let them have a comic for an issue, and then when the next issue came out, I would publish on my site the one that they published the issue before. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So then I kind of tried to cover two bases there. So I was pushing it myself with the actual exclusive content, but then also pushing their magazine and seeing what came back from that. And it was really weird. I got kind of like, I did get a kind of crossover crowd seeming to jump on board. So I had people who were very like comics fans and but not so much web comic fans.
Yeah.
Okay. There were much more sort of print comic fans who found the magazine because they were interested in horror, but they also like comics. And then they found that and found me. And then a lot of just horror fans who kind of went, oh, this is pretty awesome. And then came to check me out.
Nice. So it was a slow sort of build up of a sort of fan base then, really.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I didn't really expect it to sort of go nuts or anything, yeah. But to go back to what we were saying about sort of stats and analytics and whatever,
yeah.
The guys at Popcorn Horror used to give me a breakdown of their downloads and the demographics as well. And every month it was going up. I mean, obviously with that, it's take it with a pinch of salt because obviously that's downloads globally, which is fantastic when you can kind of go, yeah, people are downloading this globally. But people downloaded it globally. There was a lot of people in the States as well as the UK. There was the two main audiences. But it was going up from like a few hundred the first issue, and it was going up like several hundred every issue until you were in a good few thousand downloads after a year. And that was really interesting to see that was going on, because you knew that was getting out there. But like I say, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, because it was like an 80 page magazine and I was a page.
Yeah.
So
Still, like, that communication they had with you is a really good thing, and probably a lot of people probably say quite rare that you know, the publisher will go, right, here's how many that have been downloaded, here's the breakdown of it. You know, the fact you said that they gave you a breakdown of it, I think is probably quite a surprisingly rare thing, because there's a lot of people who submit articles or, you know, strips to a lot of these collections or fanzines, or, you know, we're seeing a rise in these sort of, like, especially comic collective magazines, shall we say.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do people judge how well their article has been received, or how do they know how many people have downloaded this book? It's hard to say.
Exactly.
I haven't heard many tales. I mean, what you've said there is the first time I've ever heard of a creator sort of saying they gave me like a rundown and a download. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, people, before you jump name.
No.
Well, I mean, I asked them for it. It wasn't something that they kind of came to me with.
Right.
Because they were tracking their own stats, I just went, have you got any idea? I mean, like, Cara, who runs Popcorn Horror, she's pretty savvy. So I would have been massively surprised if she'd gone, no, I ain't got a clue. But yeah, I just asked her, like, can you tell me, like, how many people are downloading this? And the following day, I was an email with a breakdown of it all. And I was like, cheers, brilliant, because you've got it there.
Do you think that's something creators should do if they do things like this, if they're supplying strips to books? Because it could give you just a bit of confidence, just a bit of a boost, even if it's not to do with your work. Just seeing the magazine do well will just inspire you a bit.
If you're involved in something bigger, then definitely. I mean, again, like, we talked about stats earlier on in that. I mean, one thing, I mean, Dan, you were saying about not wanting to get too bogged down in the detail of looking at social media stats and whatever, but I'm sure, like all of us, you keep a keen eye on your web stats, because then you've got an idea not just how many people are looking, but where they're coming from as well.
Yeah, I mean, you should keep an eye on the stats. Like, it's just kind of one of those things. I was using saying I'm a bit of a creative as a crutch to not get too involved in it, where I think actually you really need to understand your audience and where they're coming from.
It's a case of picking out what the important things are, isn't it? I mean, if you're looking at your web stats and I've recently started using Reddit to push my stuff out there, which is something I never touched because I don't use it. But a mate of mine in the States was like, for fuck's sake, why is your stuff not on Reddit? And I put Rock and Purgatory out on Reddit and it went through the roof. And I put Heads out there and no one cared on Reddit, which is really strange. But now it's sort of creeping up. And I don't know whether that's because the format of it, because the fact it's ongoing rather than...
Do you think it's users as well? Because Rockin' Purgatory is such a specifically zoned, if you like metal, if you like people dying.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few more sort of odd hooks that I could kind of get out of that to some degree. Whereas again, you look at Rockin' Purgatory, you can read one page of it and you've got a measure of whatever else is going to come.
Yeah.
Whereas you randomly read a page of Heads and it's like, depending on where you've jumped on, that might be good, that might be bad, it might
entice you, it might not, yeah, as with all sort of ongoing web comics. But I mean, the thing is, like, looking at stats like that is really handy, because you can get hold of that sort of stuff yourself, or you can ask someone, like I did with Popcorn Horror. But I put out a short comic in an anthology a couple of years ago, and I'm pretty sure it did bugger all. But I couldn't tell you. I'm not going to start naming names. But basically, I thought it was pretty cool that I'd got accepted into this anthology. Yeah. So I was chuffed a bit. And just, I hadn't heard nothing since. Do you know what I mean? It was a deal that it was an unpaid deal, and I was like, okay, fine. And they were quite upfront with sort of saying, like, yeah, we don't put this out. We're not charging a fortune for this. I think it's like 52-page anthology. So it's a bit of a lump to pay out to get it printed. So fine, okay, they're gonna stump up all that. They didn't ask me for a bean, so I was like, okay, fine, you've got your little short off of me, you've got your little short off of say 10 other people as well, you're putting that out there, you're going out there to flog it. That's, again, don't want to necessarily sort of blow the exposure horn too much here, but at the same time I was like, do you know what, I'm doing sod all. Still get to own this. It's up on my site. I'm promoting it as much as I want to. I'll use it in other anthologies, publish it where I like, but you've got it as well, and you're flogging it on my behalf somewhere. But I've heard hiding a hair of them since. I've really like pulling teeth to get any information as to like where they were going to be selling it and stuff. And then, like,
That's a different thing. Because really, when you say, like, what has been the fit, you know, how many people have bought it or whatever, I think with comic anthologies, you're not going to get those numbers, you know, because of the nature of the beast and because of what it is. Yeah. It's difficult to judge this, but they could still tell you where they're going to be selling it or where people can get it.
That's the thing. It's not necessarily all about sales. And again, bearing in mind that's an anthology, it's got loads of other people in it. So the chances of them deciding to lay their books out with my pages on display every single time, pretty slim. Just for law of averages, it's not going to happen all the time. But having an idea of where they're selling it and how they're selling it, and therefore what they're selling as well. Are they selling this is their published book, have our book, or is it a case of them saying there's lots of different people in this? I'm encouraging people to pick it up and flick through it, because that in itself is probably better than the sales. I'd rather people pick up an anthology that I'm in, flick through it, see my work, other people's work, and maybe stop on someone's work, not necessarily mine, and go, I like that, who's that? And ask a question of the publisher. But I couldn't tell you whether that was happening. I couldn't tell you whether they were kind of going, yeah, we own all this, it's just us, yeah, great, have it. I'm doing them a disservice possibly there, but again, having had no feedback,
you don't know.
No idea. I've seen a couple of tweets come up with them occasionally, sort of out at a con somewhere and whatever, and they may or may not have that book with them. But it's just like even just that. I mean, it wouldn't take them very much to say we are at these cons, and we are selling it through our site, and we've sold n number of books. I'm not going to start bothering for profit share out of that, but just knowing that you've sold it somewhere, they've presented it and exhibited it somewhere, that's all I need to know, really. And that's really hard to get out of people sometimes.
Yeah, and like if your like strip is an anthology, you know, you're not getting royalties or anything like that, but you still want people to pick up the book, don't you? I think if you've made an anthology that have got creators in it, let them know where people can get it, because those creators, everyone's eager to just shout where their work is, no matter how big or small this, you know. You may do a one pager in an anthology, you're still going to want people to read it. Why would you not? So yeah, that's something for people making anthologies to bear in mind. Like if you've asked someone to do a strip for your book, those people will probably shout about it quite a lot, I imagine.
Definitely. I was just going to say that I would wholeheartedly encourage people to do what I did with the type of thing with Popcorn Horror, though. It's just an opportunity to get out there in a completely different way. So I mean, if there's and I'm also doing, I don't know if you guys know, Unfortunate Tales that I'm doing as well. I don't know if you guys have come across that.
So
again, it's off the back of contacts I've made through Popcorn Horror and Slaughtered Bird, which is another site I was doing reviews for and stuff. So there's a site called Attack from Planet B. And they just basically do like loads of reviews and articles and stuff about quite a lot of the old sort of cult classic genre films.
Nice.
Thought you'd like that. It's definitely, it's right up your street, guys. So yeah, basically Ken, the guy who runs that, he got in touch with me, really likes my work. He bought a little commission off me, and we just kind of stayed in touch. And he sort of pitched to me the idea of doing a comic because he'd heard of me through Popcorn Horror. So he then pitched me the idea of doing a comic for him on his site. And it started off quite ambitious, and we sort of whittled it down. And they're now sort of like three panel comedy strips. I'll probably go over a link. But yeah, they're kind of like riffing on old horror movies. I'm not sure where he's going with it, because they're all kind of connected, but they're just sort of three panelers. We've done one with based on Scanners, one that's The Fly, sort of cross between like the original Vincent Price one and the Jeff Goldblum one. Just done Street Trash. Next one's going to be Return of the Living Dead.
So they're just sort of like, Street Trash, sort of, Jesus.
Yeah, fucking hell, isn't it?
Fucking hell.
But, I'm not familiar with that one.
You're not familiar with Street Trash?
No, I don't think so.
Rich, just tell Dan a little bit about Street Trash.
Jesus, Street Trash. How do you sum that up in a bloody sentence?
let me Google this, mother.
To say it's homeless people melting from dodgy booze, and that just it's justice, does it?
Yeah.
A guy flushes himself down the toilet as he dissolves. That's not even me making up. That's let's get that MJ already. Unfortunate Tales, though, it's another one. It's a web comic, but not like a web comic that you'd normally see. Do you know what I mean? It's something that's just up there. It's on his site. When he's got another script ready, he gives me a shout. I'll get the art done, and we bang it up straight away and plug the living hell out of it. It's just another avenue. It's equivalent to what I was doing with Popcorn Horror, but there's no way that I would have ever come across Ken and that idea, or had it myself, if I hadn't kind of gone through some of the processes I'd gone through and worked with some of the people I'd worked with before. It's not the sort of thing when you're kind of thinking, I'll do a webcomic, I'll try and get my stuff out there. You kind of think, oh, maybe I'll send my stuff to some interestingly diverse sites and reviewers who might sort of give it a bit of a different spin and maybe sort of run a piece on it. But I'd never have thought, I know, I'm going to approach a horror review website, essentially, and see if they want a comic.
Yeah.
But that's what I ended up doing.
That's an interesting avenue, because, and I think that's a good way to build up like your fan base, as it were, isn't it? You know, because you have these people, you know, checking out this site, and then if they suddenly realise, God, I love checking out that strip, you know, when I come get my horror news, you know, I'll just have a read of that once a week. It's just another avenue, isn't it? You know,
exactly.
But Rocking Purgatory, was that kind of exclusively sort of like Popcorn Horror and your website? Was that the only place that was appearing?
Yes, until I collected it all for print.
Yeah. So what was the journey for that then?
For the print or for
The collection, really, you know, when you put it all together, because it's, you know, when you've done all the work and then you think, oh, I'm going to put all this together, sometimes it's a bit of a Herculean task, isn't it?
Jesus, yeah. And I didn't do it by halves. I decided to do like a 48-pager, and instead of just doing it as a straight comic, I decided that it would be amazing if it was also presented as a parody heavy metal music magazine. Clever, fucking hell. I'm really pleased with it, though. I was like, I'm well pleased with how it came out. I was doing it was bi-monthly in Popcorn Horror. I already had a couple on the go before the first one was published. And I was just trying to, I just had the idea of just doing a shit ton of them until I kind of ran out of good ideas for like a first series. Again, started off as one pages, but a couple of them, they then started to need a little bit more. So I got them into two pages, and then there's a couple of four pages as well. And as I was doing it, I was just thinking, there's so many other elements that you could put into this. And it could actually like be complemented by quite a lot of other stuff. So I started writing a couple of articles, because a lot of them are, if they're not based on a specific band as such, they may be sort of influenced by a band or some of their antics and that sort of thing. So I wrote a few articles about the kind of urban legends and tales of derring do that some of these bands got up to.
Yeah.
Put those in. And then also sticking in stuff like, I wanted like a poster pull out in the middle. I used to get in like Kerrang or something.
So
instead of doing pin-ups at the back of the book, I did a poster pull out in the middle of the book. So yeah. And if you wanted to trash the actual print copy, you can pull that out and cut them up and stick them on your wall. So I had stuff like that in there. And then I started doing stuff like parody ads as well. So there's like some tour ads for bands.
Nice.
And they're the bands that are featured in the book. And
that sounds great.
And I've even got like a bass string endorsement ad as well from one of the, it's like, yeah, it's proper, just it's ripping the piss out of, like, you know, do you guys play instruments?
No. I've got no musical talent whatsoever.
I wish I did.
All right, this would be lost on you. Anyone who's listening, if you play like a guitar or something, and you've ever like picked up like a guitar like tab book or something like that, or magazine, in there, there's just riddled with stuff like endorsements and whatever and that. And there's there used to be these really cheesy ones. You've probably seen them, guys, anyway, but like just these really cheesy ones of like someone like Eddie Van Halen standing there with a guitar going, "Oh my God, I love playing PV amps because they are my life."
And it's the most like, studio shot sort of photography, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, exactly. So I've picked like one of my guys because I've got like one of the strips is like riffing off of Beth, the song by Kiss.
Yeah.
And so yeah, the band are called Smooch, and and the bass player from Smooch, who gets poisoned at the end of this by his vitriolic missus called Beth, he's there doing a bass ad, and he's just like, "Yeah, when I want the best sound, I play rockin' purgatory bass strings," and it's just this drivel that like that someone like that would be forced to say, and it's like, and then kind of spun it round with a little bit of horror kind of, so there's like a line in there about like, "Oh yeah, they're so great that even if you garrote your band members, they don't go out of tune," and
I love fake ads. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah
really good.
I don't think there's enough of them in comics, do you think? I mean, what are some classic examples of that sort of stuff apart from Viz do a lot, but...
Yeah, they do loads. Fake ads in comics,
I mean, the best you get often is just like sort of piss take brands and stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
Star
fucks coffee in the background and shit like that, don't you? And you don't often get like a full on like full page ad.
Yeah.
That's gonna be like, "Hang on, is that an ad or hold on, there's something ripped it at
me." They can be the most fun things to work on though, can't they? You know, trying to get that sort of mindset. And I know Dan, you've done a few for Vanguard in the time, haven't you?
Yeah. I tried to sort of make it a bit world building as well. So kind of like adds to it, but like they're also a chance to have a bit of a laugh.
Yeah,
like Rick was doing with his.
I mean, yeah, Dan, I really like, cause you kind of riff off the whole RoboCop thing, don't you? With like they're cutting away to the news and the little endorsements and ads and shit like that. And again, it's one of those that, like, I suppose if you know RoboCop, you're gonna spot that immediately and just like, "Yeah, I know that's good." And if you don't, then it still sits really nicely in the context of the comic. So it's just, if people don't know that's what you've been inspired by, they kind of start to come to realise that's the sort of thing. Yeah, definitely.
To sort of like have a look at like the world outside of what's going on, not trying to make it too jarring. And you can have those little fun elements of having adverts pop up and stuff like that.
And a little bit of satire within all of the superhero nonsense, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it's a superhero. Vanguard's a bit of a superhero comic, obviously, but like not straight down the line.
Yeah.
I think if you kind of look at the front cover of it, you think, "Oh, I know what kind of book this is, but as you know, it's not.
Because you did one for action figures, and I actually wanted some of those action figures. That's how I felt about that.
Well, you've got the characters like Max Dream, who's kind of an evil Superman. Or like a capitalist Superman, and there's like a couple of toy figures and muscle supplements, and they've all got warning messages on the bottom that they're not fit for purpose, and you're using this under your own risk. So, it's fun to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So you had all that with Rockin' Purgatory, and you sort of collected it. Now I know you went to Kickstarter, didn't you?
Sadly.
Yeah, and you didn't make the Kickstarter, but yet the book is still printed. It's still, you know, even though you didn't make the Kickstarter, you knew you wanted this book to be printed. So how did you go about it after that?
Mainly sulkily and in tears. But I actually went to Kickstarter twice, which was quite eye-opening for me in respect of Kickstarter. Because I put the first one out there with some quite outlandish, overblown rewards. It was basically all the stuff that I'd been thinking about for the previous sort of 18 months of like, oh, this would be great if you had one of these as well because of the metal element of it all. So I had like tour shirts and backstage pass lanyards and gig tickets and plectrums and stuff like that. And it all sort of like, it looked like a good package, and I did get like quite a lot of people interested in it, but actually when it came down to it, people didn't really want to stump up the cash for that. Okay. So I'd I had it on for a grand, which would have sort of just about covered an average of those kind of rewards. Mm-hmm. It didn't hit, but it was also around the same time that I was organizing Wimbledon Comic Art Festival. So lessons learned there, don't try and run a Kickstarter, organize a comic event, and also be drawing a comic and hosting that event when people are walking through the door, because it's fucking impossible. But so I let it sit for a bit, and I launched another Kickstarter, brought down the rewards, brought down the target, and I was just shy of it, which was a bloody shame. But at the same time, it kind of made me think, do you know what, a lot of the same people who backed it the first time, backed it the second time. There's clearly some people that want to get involved in this. I've got to find a way to make this happen. Plus, also, even if I just get a bloody copy done for myself, yeah, I'm going to do that. Because it's, yeah, the print format of it all is quite important to me. I prefer my physical books anyway, but because of what I was saying about how I designed the book,
yeah,
I mean, you can read it digitally, it's no problem at all, but I just don't think it really has the punch.
Yeah.
Because of how you want to hold it and how you I want people to be resisting the urge to pull out that post, to pull out in the middle and stuff like that, and clip out the ads and shit like that. So I just basically saved up a bit and then got very, very, very lucky by getting quite a big commission piece in, which essentially covered the cost of a short print run of it.
Nice.
Which is really handy. And then knowing that I was going to be able to cover most of the cost, I just put a pre-order up. So I just ran a big cartel store and just told them, did really Billy Basic DIY pre-order, and just basically put it on sale and just told everyone it's just up for a month, and then I'll actually get it printed once I've got enough kind of money in the kitty. And I've got enough pre-orders to actually fill up the rest of the gap that I needed. So managed to get it out there, which I was really pleased about.
Nice. And I think that's something for people to bear in mind, I think. You know, I mean, even if your Kickstarter doesn't make it, that's not the end of the world. You can, you know, if you still want to get your comic out there, you will get your comic out there by hook or by crook, isn't it? Really.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I quite a few people suggested this to me, but I just immediately just said no to it at all. Like I said, the whole thing is 48 pager. It's quite hefty, but not 100% of it is comics. So quite a few people said to me, well, why don't you shave off the supplementary stuff that you've put hours of work into? why don't you just disregard that? But like, why don't you just shave it down just to being just a collection of comics? And that would take it down in a page count and therefore in cost, and therefore maybe it'd be a little bit more attractive, because I don't think I was charging the earth. I mean, on Kickstarter, it was a fiver for a 48 pager. And I was offering free postage on that as well for UK. So I was
that's a good price, isn't it?
So I mean, it's had to go up now because I've done a shorter print run, it's cost more per unit. But yeah, at the same time, people saying like, oh, like, if you just knock that off, surely it'll knock sort of like, I don't know, 100 quid off your print costs and whatever, and you could do it all cheaper. And I was like, no, because this is the book I want to release. This isn't actually about pleasing the people. It's nice that there's some people that want to be pleased, but at the same time, I've fundamentally done this all for myself. I'd love to be doing comics for a living, but I'm not at the moment, and so at the moment it's not a career deal breaker for me. I stubbornly just turn around and go, fuck off, no, this is my comic, I'm doing it my way. And I really think that's important, that creators do stick to their guns and don't compromise if they don't have to, and just do the things that they want to do because it's important to them.
I mean, we certainly see, like, especially when people want to get a publishing deal, and they have like they might have a concrete idea in their head, and the publisher sort of says, well, why don't you change this? Why don't you change that? You know, how lenient are you with your baby, as it were? You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you change it so much, it doesn't, it moves away from what it was and becomes something else. Yeah.
That's the thing. If you've got some compromises you're happy to make, then great. But then at the same time, if you're in the position where you're just, if a publisher comes to you and they kind of suggest some things that you're susceptible to, they're great, fine, maybe go ahead with that. But if you're going to do it for yourself and you want to just kind of try and get it out there and try, if you're doing it to please the people rather than to please yourself.
Yeah, you've always got to have that view, haven't you? Because I know certainly some suggestions may be made where you're like, I'm not going to do that. But you have to also be prepared to see. I think with every suggestion, you've got to look at it, see if it works, and then before you bin it. Because I know there's certainly, this creator we know, like Jay Gunn, he had with Coalface, he's made a sort of creative decision on that, which has changed the character. But he looked at it, he had it in his mindset, I don't want to do that at first. And then when he saw how that could affect the story and add new meaning and layers to the story, and I think it's going to be an even better story for it. So he's gone ahead and done it. So it's always interesting to see, what suggestions you get and whether they're any good or not.
I suppose that's how it's pitched to you as well, though, isn't it? Because if someone came to you and said, change this, it would be good, then you'd start to think about, well, no, probably I don't want to do that. That's your opinion. And then you mull it over and maybe you'll come back to it. Whereas if someone says, change this and I'll give you some money. Do you know what I mean? Then it's a different suggestion, isn't it, really?
If someone said to you, change this because of X, Y, Z reason, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, but if someone said, change that character to this. Mm. Or why am I doing that? And it's like, I think it'd look better. So, what you think maybe doesn't matter too much to me. Yeah.
Have you ever had anyone suggest, before you had something published, what if this character was, a completely different sort of thing? Have you ever had that sort of thing?
Well, I had one where I probably said on the show before, I was doing a 10-page comic for like a commercial entity, and they said, we want the character to look like a cross between RoboCop and like a superhero. And I sent the sketches over, and they were fine. I did the first 4 pages and sent them over, and I went, no, it looks... doesn't look like we wanted. God, can we change it back to something else? So I had to redesign it and basically redraw the first 4 pages out of 10. And it was like, fuck's sake. I couldn't grumble too much because I was getting paid for the time, not for the product. So if that's what you want, fine.
Yeah,
it was a bit galling, but...
Yeah, but that's working for someone else's sort of idea, isn't it? That's...
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I'm not sure, I'm trying to recall if I've been asked... yourself, have you been sort of said?
I don't think I haven't had that yet, because a lot of my stuff is strictly sort of
for you, yourself,
myself. Kind of. Yeah,
you're the boss.
Well, you wouldn't know that listening to this show weekly. but I'd like to move forward into, pitching some ideas to publishers and stuff. That's one of the next steps I want to make. So. Therefore, I'm opening the door to those sort of, criticisms or suggestions. And that's going to be an interesting way of looking at things, I think.
I mean, years ago, I was remember animated e-cards when they were a thing.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I used to work on animating them in Flash. And often I'd, do it, and then the person would say, right, we want these changes. And it would just be, stupid things and just, oh, fuck's sake. But
it made you the man you are today.
It's that's about 5 hours of work for virtually nothing. There's no discernible change, but when they're saying you got to do it. So
with comics though, you have to make those changes at a certain point before you get too far down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to redraw 48 pages of a comic, do you?
Oh god, no. Yeah. To be fair though, nowadays when someone says, right, I don't like that character's hairstyle for whatever reason, going back digitally and changing that is not so much of a ball ache as opposed to going back and redrawing every single fucking character and on every page. That's a blessing and a curse, as we said.
Yeah, because sometimes you just want to tweak a little bit too much, don't you?
Yeah. I'm kind of going through that with my artwork at the moment, as I'm I think I'm spending too much time digitally colouring and doing background stuff as opposed to actually doing the stuff which I like, which is the drawing. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to do the drawing and that's the bit I enjoy, but doing the kind of fucking around with the digital colouring, it feels like a bit of a crutch at times. So I'm analysing myself in that regard.
Ooh.
And see what I'm getting up to.
Be careful. Don't overanalyse too much. You'll go blind.
If that's a possibility, that would happen years ago.
So you had the journey of Rocking Purgatory and all of that interesting sort of adventure that you had. But your new thing is Heads, with an exclamation mark. Which is a different flavour of Beast entirely, isn't it, really? It's for those who don't know about Heads, what is it?
So Heads is a sci-fi private detective story. It's based on this private detective guy called Steve Datson. He's ex-police. He's sort of quite downtrodden and nihilistic. And he and his partner start to get called in on a variety of different unusual crimes that start to build up to something much more sinister.
And I know you said in one of your blog posts that you're influenced by They Live.
Yeah.
Which is amazing film.
Fucking brilliant film, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, the They Live element, you won't see that come into it for quite
it was
a while.
It was interesting. I read the blog post and then I was looking at the comic. I was thinking, it's not so obvious, which I like. I like the fact, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's less the sort of... It's the principle of what They Live is rather than the story of They Live, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
That's more where it is. I mean, it's... I got quite excited with one of my proofreaders who came back to me and just went, "Oh, this is like the X-Files if Luther was in it." And I was like, "Ah, okay, yeah, I see where this is going," because it's kind of gritty South London, kind of crime noir sort of thing, but with just weird shit. There's a bigger plot behind it as well. That's going to build up to something quite sinister and rather ridiculous as well within the context of what it all is.
So it's a long form. This is quite different from Rocket in Purgatory because it's a long form story you're telling, isn't it? How are you finding that?
I'm really enjoying it as it goes. I made some executive decisions a couple of years ago to not start it properly and to sit on it for a bit, because I kind of had the idea about 2 years ago. And it was when I was sort of, playing around with Rocking Purgatory as well, so I kind of had them both in tandem. Rocking Purgatory was a lot easier to get going because it's one-page strips at the time. But I was like, I really want to get on with this. I've got some good ideas for where I want it to go. I really want to get on with it. And I don't think my writing or my art were up to the challenge at the time, and certainly not the maturity of the plot ideas. So I kind of just tinkered with it in gaps between Rock and Purgatory and other bits and bobs, and just kind of threw ideas around until it came together. I'm really lucky that I've got a very close friend called Heather Chapman, who was with me at Wimbledon Comic Art Festival. So Dan, you might have met her. I know that Tony did. She's sort of burgeoning graphic novelist. She's a fantastic illustrator. She's a very close friend of mine. We go out and we have coffee, we draw together and we throw ideas around and stuff. And she's really helped me kind of sit on things a little bit. And just like encouraging each other to like develop things in the right ways, taking that objective eye of what we're doing. And she's been saying for ages, like, I want you to fucking do Heads, but like do it right. Like it's coming. And now I've actually got on with it. She's started looking at it, just going, yes, this is where it needed to be. So that's the bar for me. Do you know what I mean? The fact that she's sort of sitting there going, this is what I've been waiting for. So I'm really pleased about that. But it's meant that I've actually developed the long plot much better.
Is it done in sort of like sort of issue size chapters, or is it just one long ongoing tale?
Originally it was going to be just one long ongoing, but then I realised that'd be really shit for cliffhangers. and I really want to throw in loads of red herrings and loads of cliffhangers. So the first issue is complete, and it's got what I think is quite a nice meaty little cliffhanger on the end there. It was going to be just sort of like, let's roll it until it's done. Let's let the story tell itself. But then I was like, actually, hold on, that's quite unwieldy. And if anyone were to ever become interested in publishing it, that's quite a sell, really. Do you know what I mean? To actually push that out there and kind of go, oh yeah, you might be interested in this, but it's going to go on for God knows how long until I get to the point. It'll be really exciting along the way, but I ain't finishing this till it's finished. But I was like, actually, let's try and wrap it up a bit more. So now I'm doing kind of the first main story arc as 6 issues, with like a couple of subplots in it.
Yeah.
And it's going to bring us to a really significant end point, that could be it if I wanted it to be. It could just wrap up at that 6-issue miniseries. But what I hope to do is that's the first kind of the first book.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on to the next major arc where it takes it into the next level.
Yeah. I mean, if the story's as sort of expansive and as head spinning as it sounds like it's going to be, you might need a break to do a 20-page, just sort of, I don't know, cartoon.
Oh God, yeah. Well, that's why I've got. Thank God I've got Ken and Unfortunate Tales that comes up now and then, because I'm just like,
yeah.
Again, I'm really liking doing the black and white on heads, because it's all pencil tones. So I'm really loving doing that. But then Ken will come along sort of every now and again and go, here you go, do something really garish. And I'm like, thank fuck for that. I can get the pro marks out now. nice palette cleanser.
Yeah.
And then we're back in again.
So what is the sort of way you do your artwork for Heads then, and what actually made you decide on that sort of style and colour palette?
Yeah.
It was playing around with lots of different stuff, really. Again, like when I hang out with Heather, because she's a fantastic illustrator. She's studied art, and I'm going to do a bodge job of telling you her credentials, so I'm not going to bother. But yeah, she's got much more under her belt than I have. But she's dabbled in loads of different mediums as well. And when we met and I showed her like the comics and the things that I wanted to do, she sort of started dabbling in that. I've dabbled in other things. So I've tried out some watercolors and things like that I never would have done before, and just played around with things until I came to something that I really wanted to do and really liked. And funnily enough, that turned out to actually just be like old traditional sort of pencil tone black and white comics. And it's kind of taken me through different mediums to kind of find that and feel really comfortable with it. And
okay.
There's a portability element to this as well. So with Rock and Purgatory, they were all based on a 9-panel grid. Yeah. And what I actually did was every single panel is actually an A4 page.
Right.
So
wow. Okay.
So the pages are huge. But it meant that, like, even though that would take quite a long time, it meant that you can go anywhere with A4 Bristol board under your arm, handful of pencils and maybe some colours, and you can kind of rock up and draw comics wherever the fuck you like. Whereas if you're trying to sort of lug sort of A2 paper with you, do you know what I mean? And try and find a space to sit. It ain't going to happen, is it? I mean, Dan, you draw stuff on the train, you know what I'm on about.
Exactly.
You've got, like, it's not even necessarily a case of like, oh, being ready for when like you feel inspired, but actually just like, so, you know, like any spare moment, I'm just like, yeah, I've always got my stuff on me. I can always do like a panel of heads or something. So, for the Rock and Poetry thing, it was huge, because obviously the pages were massive. It meant that I got to stick loads of stuff in it, but that was great. But I turned the challenge on its head, and now heads, every page is actually drawn in actual size on an A4 page. So I'm limiting it down to what I can draw with an actual size.
Ah, okay.
So it means that the style's changed a little bit as well. So things that have, like, things that I previously would have put loads of aching detail into in backgrounds or something, maybe I can't do that because it's just too small to really get into. So I'm coming up with different ways of presenting the locations and the situations that they're in, and different ways of framing the panel and stuff like that, so that I can actually draw it well and keep it moving.
So have you found that sort of transition, like with using the A4, has that sped up your process in terms of, like, you know, are you literally doing it while you travel sometimes?
Pretty much, yeah. It's really handy to be able to do that. Because you can carry a couple of pages that are half done, handful of pencils, a brush pen, and just bung it all into like a little folder. Nice. For comics to keep you occupied on the way as well. Do you know what I mean?
Do you get any funny looks on the train like Dan does?
All the time. There's nothing to do with drawing comics.
That's what makes you want to jump to digital, like drawing digitally, is the fact that I don't have to then ink it and scan it in, blah blah blah. But with a digital, I can just go straight ahead with the same thing, like a small little digital pad, and draw straight into it.
Yeah,
that's something you've been looking at.
Yeah,
yeah.
Moving to digital though can like extremely change your style, can't it? It can really sort of, you know, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the better. I'm amazed when it doesn't change a person's style at all.
Yeah, I guess you get a cleaner look, whereas like the kind of the pencils, you can get more of a rough kind of.
That's the thing. I'm not keen on. There's a sweeping generalization, but I'm not as keen on the cleanliness of digital art sometimes. I'm one of these people who kind of I like the bits that are wrong. I like the bits that have, like, you can see something's been done under threat or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean if you look through my comics as well, there's bits where there's like continuity cock-ups and whatever, or bits that I've missed, and like when I've seen it, I'm like, oh well, I could go back and change that now, but fuck, it's done. I quite like that there's a little bit wrong, and there's a little bit of something that it's gritty. It makes you look at it, and it's not too clean and not too easy on the eye. Sometimes you want something where, like, yeah, where you've inked a little bit too thickly on something, and it kind of like jars you a little bit, and it's, and being able to tidy that up digitally is all too easy sometimes.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, if you've made a bit of a cock up with pen and ink, and then you're also going to use the same piece to then do colours or pencils over, it's a lot harder to uncock it. So, do you know what I mean? So you've got to live with it. And once you've got to live with it, then that's a decision made, and that changes the panel.
Yeah. And I think certainly when you're working on like noir or pulp type stories, or like what Heads is, it's got that sort of gritty sort of feel to it, hasn't it? It's got a clean sort of line style wouldn't work with this story that you're doing, is it really?
No, exactly. Whereas something like the stuff that you did, Dan, that would lend itself because of the kind of action you've got. You want the precision in there and that as well. So I could definitely see why you're like, other than the convenience of doing the digital stuff, the progression of that, it will complement the work that you're doing.
Yeah,
I can see what you mean. We're kind of like, if I wanted to do a horror title, there's a bit more kind of scratchy and rough.
Yeah,
yeah.
Trying to simulate that in digital, might as well just do it traditionally and save yourself all the hassle.
Yeah,
out of interest, Vince, how did you draw Murder Road? Was that traditional or digital?
That's traditional. I've got the 11 by 17 sort of blue line pages. It's my first time sort of having blue pencils and then inking over that, so I don't have to rub out any pencil. And then, which meant it was a little bit looser, but I still can't get away from it being my style. You know, in your head, in my head, I was thinking, oh, it's going to look like this. And then I start drawing, it's like, oh, fuck, it's me, isn't it? And then I scan it in, and then the colours are all digital, which was just, it started off, I just wanted to do it in the format that, like, for instance, Daniel Warren Johnson used for, like, Space Mullet, just one tone of a colour. That's all I was going to do. I was just going to have one tone of grey. But I just couldn't help myself by just adding another tone on chapter two.
And,
so
you didn't realise how much work that creates yourself.
Oh, God, yeah. So that's the maximum I'm going to do. It did add a nice bit of depth to part two. But I've learned from my mistakes in the past, just don't do too much. You know, it doesn't need it as well. Do you know what I mean? If you do what the page requires, you don't need to just noodle all the time. And the way I guess I sort of coloured in a really archaic way for Murder Road as well, because some people deal with the, they have like the black and white artwork, and then they're colouring in the greys, they're basically dropping in the shadows and stuff, whereas I would have the black and white line work, I would overlay a grey colour to the whole page, and then I'd rub out, I'd take out the sort of grey where the light would be, so I'm almost doing it in reverse. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But it's just quite satisfying. You know, I find it quite fun and quite satisfying to do it that way. You know, but that's because I'm also
so
doing
many different
it.
Ways to do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
With digital.
Yeah. I may do it differently if I had a tablet and like a pen. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. When I'm colouring this, it's a screen and a mouse.
Oh man, that's tricky.
Yeah.
I've not used a mouse like that for years.
So that's how I'm doing it. That's why I keep it sort of simple, you know, the block, you know, I don't do anything too specific. I'm trying to keep it to the block stuff. It would probably be quicker and easier when I get the tablet or whatever it will be in the end. But that's my I have a really archaic way of doing things.
Can't you pick up like a secondhand Wacom off of eBay for like 20-30 quid?
I could, but you know, I don't use it on a daily. I'm used to what I'm doing at the moment for Murder Road, and I think with the projects that I'm doing at the moment, Murder and Red, I'm going to keep going until the end on both of them with the way it's going, and whatever the next thing will be, which is in the planning, I'm going to try some new stuff out, you know, and see.
Do you see a tablet work?
No.
Mouse?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all mouse and stuff like that, so there you go. You use a Wacom quite a lot at work, do you, Dan?
All the time. I keep telling people, use the fucking Wacom, and I've converted a couple of people.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people that still use the mouse, and they're telling me how they've got a carpal tunnel and stuff. And I say, oh, okay. You know, you keep using that mouse. I keep telling you a million times, use the fucking Wacom. But
he's starting to kick off again. But the storytelling in Heads, back to Heads, it's a detective story, and what I've noticed on this is, even though in the past, you know, you've gone for the shock, the gore, the smash and grab sort of storytelling, you know, that just forces your attention. But Heads is a different sort of tale, isn't it? You're telling a detective tale where there's a lot of dialogue, there's a lot of sort of mystery work going on. How have you been finding that?
Yes, certainly different. There's a lot of planning and rewriting. Whereas with my other stuff, it's quite dynamic and organic, so I'll start throwing art together while I'm writing a script, and then kind of have like a kind of one-man Marvel method almost going on with some stuff, whereas this is much more like, no, we need to make sure that the characters are developing properly, that we're not going off on too many tangents and that they're not repeating myself and that kind of thing. So I'm finding that quite tricky, but it's really interesting when you sort of when you read back over the scripts that you've done, you kind of think like, oh, you get to the end of it, like, oh my God, yeah, this is clearly amazing. And you read back and it's like, Jesus Christ. what the fuck have I been going on about here? This is the most banal shit, whatever. And I thought this was character development. No, this is dog shit. And or just a repetition of things, like in the first issue. What I really wanted to do with the first issue was try and establish Datsun particularly. Anyone else that I could establish would be handy, as long as I dropped in his partner and a couple of other key people who developed later. Introduce the Heads gang very briefly, but make it sort of a fleeting glance so that you're sort of intrigued. But the main thing I needed to kind of get across was this idea of that shit's going down, like odd shit's happening, and that Datsun's already sort of like thinking ahead, trying to like embed that into the reader's mind as to sort of how he thinks and where he's going with it. And he doesn't get to talk to a lot of people in the first issue, and it's mainly his partner, and it was really difficult to not just basically have them have the same conversation every other page. And it's a difficult balance trying to sort of go, right, well, I need you to have got to the end of this issue, and if nothing else, even if you don't care about anything else, the one thing you should be able to say is Steve Datsun is quite stubborn. And he is definitely, definitely thinking that all this mad shit is connected and no one else believes him. But without sort of ramming it down your throat on every single page. So it's quite a balance.
It's tricky because you want to give the reader enough info that they can put stuff together, but not too much, and don't want to kind of force feed it to them. And how much you're giving up is, I find, that's where the magic is, as it were, the art of it.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
And that's changed. It's drastically changed what issue two is going to be as well. So the main plot points for issue two are still in there, leading into the plot points for issue three. But what actually happens and the dialogue and those interactions is almost completely different from what I originally planned for issue two, all based on how issue one came out and the fact that I need to keep the right level of pace of introducing that kind of influence of what's going on. So yes, it's certainly a big difference from just deciding, right, I'm going to kill this rock star by pulling a fucking ceiling down on top of his head. because he's just hung off the lighting rig.
Yeah. Because this is also a web comic as well, isn't it? So, you know, how often are you posting this?
Well, this is something brand new for me as well. Cause, but yeah, I'm doing it weekly at the moment. Mm-hmm. So on Tuesday, it updates every Tuesday. So this Tuesday sort of finishes the first kind of scene. And then I'm going to have a little break before I start it off again. So yeah, that's interesting, sort of pushing it out weekly and trying to, like, what we were saying about, like, the whole self-promotion thing earlier on. Jesus, that's ramped up.
Yeah.
I was kind of going on about things as it was, with sort of like, yeah, buy my comics, look at my stuff and whatever. But now I'm like, shit the bed. I've basically got to, like, drag you people over to have a look at this thing every week. It's like, is that too much? Is it not? And I read a few web comics, but again, I like the ones that I read because I know they're there. So the promotion washes over me. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's the thing, is the promotion is there for those webcomics, isn't it? Even though you don't see it, because you're reading it, you are completely blind to it. That's quite interesting.
Yeah. That's quite interesting. But I mean, I love my print comics. I always intended to get this out in print one way or another, which is why I end up going with that issue by issue kind of approach. So I can release this in print issues. I could do it as a collection, as a bigger book or whatever. I've got options there. So my plan is to sort of keep it going for now, and possibly launch into a print version at some point over summer, maybe.
Yeah.
For the first issue. First issue is only 20 pages long, so I mean, as a weekly comic, that's still a considerable amount of time to sort of
read that.
But without giving the game away, I've written, drawn, and completed it all, as you two both know. But it's kind of ready to go. I mean, I could drop it if I wanted to get it into print now.
Yeah.
I could do it. If I wanted to release it as like a full digital edition as just the first issue, I could do that right now. So, and I like to make sure that I'm way, way, way ahead with all the stuff that I'm creating. So I've written all of issue two, I've drawn all of issue two, and I've done most of the pencil tones on it and started editing it as well. So, so there's a good chance that I could have, by the time I kind of see this first one through and get it into print, the second one would be good to go. You could press print on that again. So I like to just have more in the bank as well.
Yeah.
Give trade secrets now. But yeah, you know what I mean? It's all well and good sort of sitting there drawing and like tweeting like progress pictures as you're doing something, but it's much more controlled if you've actually got like a big bank of work and you can kind of go, right, well, today I just fancy sharing like this panel because tease people a little bit, and rather than having to bloody draw it to tease people.
And plus, because it's a bigger story, you can just keep chugging on with the story, you know, and you could get to six, you know, when you've got to the end of issue six and just think, right, now I want a collection, you know, because it worked nicely, you know, and by then it's built up some momentum. It's built, you know, we also live in a world where a lot of people wait for the trades, don't they?
Exactly.
Or certainly webcomic collections. I'm a sucker for them, like, all the time. Yeah, you know, definitely. I love webcomics, but you know, if one of my favorite webcomics, you got to have the collected, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think the thing with me as well, I'm quite impatient, and one of the things that is a shame about small press, and it's just the nature of the beast, is the fact that it sometimes takes a very long time between issues of something.
Yeah.
So if you've got one shots and stuff, I think that's probably why I've always done sort of like smaller stuff, short form stuff in the past, because I know that I can achieve it and I know I can put it out as a package and it's done. If I want to do a follow up, I can choose to do that. But actually, if you just want that, you can have it. It's done. It's finished.
Yeah.
Whereas like the longer form stuff, if you're buying small press issue ones, issue twos and whatever, there's sometimes quite a big drag between those. And that's just because it takes a fuck of a long time to make a comic.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm saying. It's everyone listening to this knows this. Do you know what I mean? Like, it takes a fuck of a long time to make a comic. And if you're a fan of small press, you accept that and you'll play that waiting game. And as much as I do as well, I'm just too impatient sometimes, and I don't want things immediately, but I just want them a little bit sooner. I mean, even to the point of like my pull list as well. There's some stuff as well. I'm like, Jesus, I've got to wait a month for the next one of them. Oh, fucking hell! Not even if it's a necessarily compelling storyline at the time. It's just like it's a month. It's a whole month, 4 odd weeks before I'm going to get the next one of them. Jesus, that's a long time. And so if a month's too long for me to wait between like issues of Green Lantern, for fuck's sake, then wait between, like, a year between releasing Heads issue 1 and Heads issue 2, I ain't gonna fucking flop me. So again, going back to what I was saying about the portability of the pages, I have flown through this. So the first issue of Heads was all completed in 4 months. So that is writing, doing the pencils, inks, pencil tones, editing, lettering, the lot, package done. So that was all done in 4 months. The second issue's taken me a bit longer. I had a few commissions come in. I had a little bit of with the writing process, I needed to tweak it a bit. That's taken 5.5 months. So what I wanted to do was being able to just chug these out if I want to. So actually being able to lug them around with me means that I can finish a page a lot quicker, but not compromise the quality. So I've changed my style, as I was saying. Like there's certain things I'll do with backgrounds and settings, and I'm happy with every single panel. So I'm not compromising anything. I'm just able to do it quicker, and that's what I plan to keep doing. Just try and expedite this as much as I can, because I've got the ideas flowing around in my head, and I think if I sit on it too long and ponder, it will just either stagnate or become so diluted by putting other things in it. So just keeping up the pace is my plan with this.
So obviously your enthusiasm is in no question when it comes to comics. So is that what led you to do Wimbledon Comic Art Festival?
Good segue. pretty much. I mean, it was,
how does someone like who's known for making comics suddenly think, right, I'm gonna put on a comic event? You know, how does it begin, and what is that journey like?
The main thing was, because I was living in Wimbledon at the time, just down the road, Colliers Wood, just down the road from there, and it was really surprising that in an area that you've got like an art college and a fashion college and loads of like very creative little startups and things like that, it's quite sort of burgeoning there. And it was bugger all. There's not a comic store. There isn't, like, even if you go into like Waterstones, there's hardly any graphic novels in there or anything. And I was just really surprised. And I sort of talked to a few people and just sort of got the gist of whether or not this was something people would be interested in. It seemed it was. And I was like, well, it needs to happen then, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? There's clearly an interest there and it's not being met. And I actually used to run a music promotions company many moons ago. So I was used to putting on events and managing large amounts of people who were all doing something completely different to me on the day. And I was like, oh, fuck it. Should we try and get this to happen? It was basically just a thought of, I'd like to go to this myself. And it's not being put on by anyone else, so I might as well do it myself then.
And then, like, what's the next step? Because that's, you know, to go, right, let's make it, is easy enough to say. I know I've certainly definitely thought that. But how do you build it from scratch?
It's really a case of just trying to find the right hooks and build it all up, really, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough that I used to go and draw in Wimbledon Library quite a lot, because my eldest son, he used to go to martial arts down the road on a Saturday morning. So he'd go and do martial arts, I'd go and draw for a bit and then come and collect him. And just generally as well, like, we'd always be in Wimbledon, pop into the library and that, and Dylan and I'd go and sit and have a draw and just hang out a bit. And they'd actually turned the back, Dan, you've obviously been to the place now, but for anyone who's not been to Wimbledon Library before, it's a massive big old sort of classic library building. But what used to be out the back was their huge archaic old reference library, so it was big sort of like bookcases with ladders and leather bound tomes and that kind of thing, and they just stripped it all out. Apparently it was being used but not for what was in it. So they stripped it all out, restructured it all, and turned it into a venue called Merton Art Space. And they did that in, I think, just beginning of 2017. And they were just basically just trying to put out sort of creative arts events. So there were some talks, there were some performances, they had fashion shows, they had like local schools and colleges doing presentation pieces there as well. And they were just trying, after like stuff, do you know what I mean? Just creative cultural stuff. And through a friend of a friend, I got to talking to the head of libraries in Wimbledon, And he was trying to like get out there and get as many new, interesting, diverse things into Merton Art Space in its first year. And it turns out he's a massive metal fan, which was handy.
Nice.
Got a lot of house on fire. He used to be in the music industry as well, and cause they'd like they'd Jar Wobble do a show there, and that was because he's mates with Jar Wobble. So as you do. So yeah, we got chatting about doing something. I was like, come on, let's do a comics event. And he was like, yeah, go for it, fill your boots, mate. And that was it. I ran away and just started planning it all.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean the music promotions background is really handy, because yeah. I said, oh yeah, I just want to go ahead and start planning it. It ain't as simple as that. I mean, yeah, having dealt with putting on bands in venues where you've got to book a venue, you've got to do your promotion, you've got to make sure that like four bands show up, and in each of those four bands there's four or five people, so that's about 20 people you've got to get in, plus their mates, so you've got to make sure either pay or don't pay based on guest list and all that kind of shit. You've got to get sound checks in, you've got to get backline sorted out, you've got to find out if people are sharing stuff, you've got to make sure that people are going to the bar, they're buying drinks, that you're DJing sometimes, that you're doing the door sometimes, and you've got security. There's shit tons there, and I did that for years off my own back, and built that up really well. So I just drew on all of that experience and kind of thought, right, hopefully there'll probably be a little less booze at this, so it might be a little bit easier. And yeah, there was a little bit less booze, but it probably wasn't easier.
Yeah, because it wasn't like a convention in a sense, was it? It was like a comic arts event, wasn't it? You know, it's that kind of.
It's a great, honestly, a great day. Really good.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I really appreciate that. I was utterly humbled when you had that as your event of the year last year as well, Dan. That really meant a lot to me.
It's brilliant.
I mean, it's just the whole ethos of it was just to get people together. It wasn't about like making money. It was free to get in. I think I'm allowed to say this now as well. The venue normally charge a higher fee. But because their first year, and because me and the head of libraries both like obituary and talked about death metal, I got it for free. So I had a free ticket to this venue, and I could have charged everyone a little bit to contribute. In hindsight, probably should, just to have helped out with some of the like outlay of like promotions and advertising. Yeah. But fuck it, it's done now. I wanted to make sure that I could get 20 people in who didn't have to pay a bean for something they'd normally have to pay like 40 quid for a table elsewhere. And then we've all kind of got this same vested interest of like we're all doing a free thing together and just like helping each other out. And then I put on the workshops, which I was hoping would have been a bit better attended. There was another piece that I wanted to do that we couldn't do because the person who was going to do it fell through. But so I lost a life drawing thing at the last minute, which is a real shame. But I asked everyone who was coming down to have a table, in exchange for having this table for free, could you please volunteer an hour on the day to help out and run a workshop? And we only had a few people needed in the end, but almost everybody said yes to doing that and stuck their hand in there and basically just went, yeah, come on, I'm getting a table for free. I will give you an hour of my day to help out. So Dan, I know you did that, which I'm really grateful for. So it was really good to sort of have kind of people in the small press community just pulling together. And everyone made friends with everyone, as far as I can tell. There were a lot of people going to other people's tables. And it was free to get in, and it was in the library, which I deliberately wanted to put it somewhere that meant that, well, so yeah, didn't have to pay money to come into something in a nihilistic way. Yeah. I begrudge sometimes going to these events where I've essentially got to pay £10 to go to the shops.
Yeah.
And to some extent, there's a little bit of that, do you know what I mean? So there's a bit of that I just can't get my head around. I mean, I used to do various other events as well that I'd table at. There was one up in Camden I used to do. They did it at the Barfly.
Yeah.
And they were charging people to get into the Barfly, and it was £2 to get in on a Sunday afternoon. And they stopped charging after 20 minutes because the amount of people just went, I just want a pint. I mean, I'll look at this stuff while I'm here, but you're charging me £2 to come to the pub. nah, fuck off. And people going in the drive. So they're just like, okay, we're going to lose money because we now won't make any money on the door, but no one's coming, so it's free. And then people come in. And like, there is an element of, if you've bought a ticket for something, you will come. And you always take a risk on a free event if you put it on, because it's free, so there's no one's got any commitment to come down.
Yeah.
But I had lots of people tell me this. I know you told me this, Dan, and I'm sure you'll back me up on this now. The people who came down, there were a load of people who came because they wanted to come because they're into comics and they knew it was on. There's a lot of people who came down because they'd heard about it and they'd come from afar because it was an event that had the sort of people there. But the majority of people who came were people from who just came into the library or just heard about it on the day and just sort of like had a flyer thrust into their hand on the way through, and they were like, oh, go on, then I'll have a look at that, it's free. And they came in and they didn't just sort of pop their head in and go. I mean, yeah, you always have a couple of those. You just kind of go, oh, what is it? Oh, it's not for me. But people who knew what it was and they were stepping into the room, they stayed, they did a lap. They went to every table. Whether they bought anything or not is a different matter. But
people buy books off of me that didn't know anything about the event till they came to the library.
Yeah, there was loads of that. And, and again, going back to stats, I made sure we had a rough footfall count as well. I should have made a note of this, really, but I know it was like a good couple of hundred people over the top of what they normally get on a Saturday had come into that. You can attribute that to people that were coming in for it. And if you add to the fact that then the majority of people seem to be people who were just coming to the library anyway, that's a hell of a lot of footfall. And I was at the front. I had a table at the front, and I did my best to try and greet people as they came in. Again, it's a little bit of the sort of the promoter and host in me that put myself out there to make sure that I was like enticing people in and let them know what was going on, and just trying to sort of, if they mentioned, oh, I like this, go over there. If I like this thing, oh, this guy's got these sort of comics you might like. But so many people came in going, wow, what is this? This is great. I thought comics was like Batman. What's this? This is great. I'm like, yeah, there's a shit ton more.
Yeah.
But it was really good to have those conversations with people, because they were like, oh yeah, well I'm a big Guardians of the Galaxy fan. It's like, oh, you read the comics? No, I've seen the films. Okay, great.
Yeah.
But just being able to think on your feet and kind of think, well, okay, well, you like sort of adventure-y, sort of little bit sort of risque kind of comics, and
if you like that kind of thing
exactly, go and talk to this guy and whatever, and that, don't talk to Garvey because he's an arsehole.
Hey!
I had to get it in. It was just good seeing people who were coming in going, oh, hang on, I thought it was just sort of people in capes, and it's like, well, no, there's loads of that. But like, go and talk to some of the manga artists that I've got like Inco there. I've got like people doing like sort of kids stuff and whatever, and you've got like Richie Chandler and then Garvey and we had Gareth Hopkins as well, and I was like, yeah, go and talk to Gareth. I was like, you'll never guess what Gareth's doing. You'll never guess that in a million years. You'll love it. And then people wandering around seeing all this stuff, and they're like, this is incredible.
And I think it's good when these small events have such a wide sort of breadth of like talent and like flavours of comic, I think. And like, obviously you put this one on, and you know, you have since moved, so this was an epically enjoyable sort of one-time deal. Sadly, but you put on a comic event off your own back that loads of people enjoyed and had a good time. Do you know what I mean? You're already putting a lot more into it than, you know. Some people talk a good game. I'm talking about myself, and they never follow through on it. Whereas you went ahead and you put on a great comic event. You know.
Thanks, man. That means a lot. I mean, what I want to do next, I mean, I used to live in Wimbledon, so if I'm still living in Wimbledon, arguably I'd be doing another one this year.
Yeah.
I've been invited back, which is really nice. But it's just, I've moved over kind of the other end of London now. It's just too much of a ball ache to do the travel as well as all the promotion.
Yeah.
And again, if you live in the area, it's quite easy to nip down to the local businesses with flyers and then go back the next day and see that they've binned them and have a go at them about it.
Well, you've already got enough on your plate doing heads, so you know.
Well, the thing is, I'd still like to get involved with more events as well, because I mean, as I said, I've got promotion in my blood, so yeah, I mean, if there's people who want to put on an event, And they want someone involved, or they want a bit of advice or something, or someone to just help them push it and whatever, I'd love to hear from people like that, because I think at the moment, yeah, I've got with heads on the go and various other life commitments and whatever, trying to sort of sort out a new event might be a bit much for me at the moment, but I could certainly jump on and add a lot to somebody else's event, and I'm hoping to be able to do that a little bit more in the future.
There you go, people. You've heard it here first. Yeah. Get in touch with them. There you go. And like,
what, we have Rick's contact details in the show notes.
They will so be in the show
give
notes.
Him a, give him a tug.
Yeah. Give him a what? This isn't that kind of show. Well, actually, maybe. Sometimes it is. Sometimes
always,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we always have good guests. And Rick was another one. So, yeah, thank you. We covered a lot of your career, but, you know, if you want, you'll see him at shows. He's about. He's always making comics. So, you know, look at the show notes.
Rick's a dude.
Yeah. He's an absolute dude. So, and it's time for the next part of the show, which is the shout-outs. Do we have any shout-outs this week? I've got a couple.
Yeah, I've got a couple of Kickstarters, actually.
Oh, go on.
The first one being Operation Boom by Reckless Studios. That's currently on Kickstarter. It's got another month to go. They're well on the way to their target. So that's issue 3 of Operation Boom. There's a plethora of rewards on there.
Yeah.
And the second one is, you might have done this one, Vince, Daryl Thorpe's.
Oh, of course. I've done both of them.
Oh, okay. Errol versus Evil.
Yes.
That's again, that's on Kickstarter. I think it's already reached its goal. Looks like it's going to be absolutely great, fantastic.
Yeah.
We've seen it, so top notch. I'm going to back that one too.
Yeah.
So we'll stick those in the show notes.
Just
definitely give those
to a look.
Just
to save our pocket money, people we know decide to put out some badass Kickstarters. It's always the way.
As you were saying earlier, Rick, like, kind of, if you think, oh, I'm going to launch my Kickstarter on X date, and that you might send it out, and then like a load of other ones come out at the same time, and you're like, oh, fuck. The other times you might do it, and there might be nothing around, and that's something you can never really plan on, because you don't know what other people are going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got a couple of other Kickstarters. They're on my brain. A couple of other shout outs. We just want a get well soon to Iz McAuliffe.
Yes.
Who's get well soon, Iz. She's one of our faves. She always hangs out with us and a good laugh. She's one of the family now. So, yeah, hope you feel better soon, Iz, from all of us. And Tony, including Tony. You know, he's here in spirit.
Yeah.
What kind of spirit would Tony be if he was a spirit, Dan?
What's the green one out of Ghostbusters? Slimer.
I meant alcohol.
That's what I was thinking as well. Oh, God.
It's not good. We've had two women in comics having head injuries on two weekends. Oh, so, comic creating ladies, watch out for this next weekend. Take it easy.
Yes.
Shit comes in threes.
Oh, don't say that, Dan. For God's sake, people, like, be careful and look after yourselves. Yeah. Oh, dear. And the other shout out is Europe Comics. We talk about them. We love them.
Yes.
And they are now in touch with us. And you may be hearing more about their books in the future.
That's the best thing they've ever done.
What, get in touch with us?
Yeah.
It's the best and last thing I'll ever do. No, but a shout out to, and I'm going to get it. Tony gave me the name, so get prepare yourself. Big thank you to Arinia Polianina. Yes, I think I
cheers, Arinia.
Yes, so yeah, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, we'll be able to get one of them on the show and have another fantastic show about.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, European comics, because I know Jerome from. I've forgotten it now.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes, our last European show, which was me and Dan, actually.
Yeah.
It's Cinebook.
Cinebook, yeah.
Yeah, Cinebook. Oh, sorry, Jerome. He was marvellous. It's been one of our more popular shows, and we're looking to do more on European comics because now, hey, you people love them, and we do as well.
So do we, yeah.
Yeah.
We've got some news we've got in the show as well, haven't we? Another platform.
What? You mean Spotify?
Yeah, Spotify.
Yeah, we're on Spotify now.
So welcome to, if you the first time you're listening to this on Spotify,
yeah, welcome to the show. Welcome, yeah. Please
hour
stick
and
with
a bit
us
into the show, welcome.
Yes. No, it's quite exciting. It's obviously we try to get out to different networks and get the word out about small press comics, And I use Spotify as well. So, and I know a couple of people that, because we're on Spotify, they're probably going to listen to us more now.
On Spotify, yeah.
God help them. But anyway, you come here to listen to us talk a good game, but now we're also going to talk about other people's game, if they're on the game. It's time to recommend some comics. So, Rick, as you're the guest, do you want to recommend a book to our lovely listeners?
Yeah, why not? Okay. I'll tell you what. I've got two things I'd like to recommend. Firstly, I want to recommend that people go and back the Little Heroes comics anthology. I know you guys have given it a big shout anyway, but I just love what they're doing as a charity, and the fact that you get comics out of it as well is fucking brilliant. For anyone who doesn't know what they do, they basically create comic making kits for kids who are staying in hospitals, and they go and deliver them to them so they have a better time while they're having a shit time. And I think that's fucking fantastic.
It's the best cause.
You don't need to say any more than that, really, do you? So, and their Kickstarter's up for their second anthology at the moment, and it's a fucking bargain as well. I mean, I've backed it. There's an option where you can get both the first anthology and the new anthology in print. I'd only actually read the first anthology digitally, so I've gone in for that, and it's only like a tenner. With postage as well, and you get both of them, and it's fantastic. And if you're not going to buy the book because you're not up for backing the Kickstarter or buying the book, you can donate to them, and if you donate £6, that pays for a kit that goes to a child. And again, that's it's nothing, is it? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. £6 for what that's going to do for a child, and not just for the child, but it's also going to make their stay in hospital easier, which means it's going to be easier for the healthcare professionals who are looking after them, make their life a bit easier because they'll have a child who's more relaxed and happy. It all works towards that. So I love what they're doing. So yeah, I can't say enough good things about what Little Heroes are doing.
Agreed.
So cool. And the other thing I was just going to shout out as well and recommend that people pick up, if they haven't, something that I use as a constant reference when I'm writing and drawing and stuff is Bone. So I know it's a big deal anyway, but Jeff Smith's Bone, it's one I just wanted to mention because from a visual storytelling perspective, it's fascinating. And if anyone is looking to kind of up their game on like subtleties in how pages are put together and how the visuals without the text can tell the story, I really think Bone is one of those things that works really well. You could strip out all the text, you wouldn't know the minutiae of the plot necessarily, but you'd know what's going on all the time, and that's down to how it's laid out, how it's drawn, all the acting that's put in it, even down, like, I mean, the thing I really like is the hands. You look at them with hands every time, like Thorne's talking to one of the Bones, it's just look at the hands and you can just tell from the hands what's going on in it. So yeah, it's something I'd wholeheartedly recommend anyone who's a writer or an artist or both who's looking to really sort of push themselves a bit more in comic creation.
Very good recommendation. I think that's a nice book that, because of the age of it doesn't get talked about enough, but for me it is a classic. It's an absolute classic. Dan, what do you want to recommend this week?
I think I bought comics illegally.
Is that what you're recommending?
You stole comics. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know, because it's a bit of a grey area. Basically, I've been for weeks trying to get hold of the old Action Force comics they used to print here in the UK. And apart from tracking down the individual issues, there was no trades and I couldn't read it online anywhere. So I was just Googling and it came up on eBay. And I thought, oh, what's this? And it was some scallywag selling them on DVD. So
I've seen this. People scan them and then, like, you can buy the actual CDs, don't they?
Yeah. So I bought the CD and I sort of read half the entire run through in a day.
Bloody hell.
It's absolutely fantastic. Such great. It brings back such memories.
Yeah.
Of the comic. And there's kind of, for those who didn't know, you used to got like a mix of the UK stuff, which they made especially. And then they used to use reprints from G.I. Joe. For some reason, they didn't think G.I. Joe would fly in the UK, so they changed it to Action Force. But after a while, I think they just got fucked off with having to re-letter Action Force over G.I. Joe in the comics. So they just brought it all into line of G.I. Joe. But it's really interesting stories. Like, it's all of it. The military hardware, and it's all on point because it's written by people who kind of know their shit. Real fun stories. I just got lost in it. Just seeing stuff that I hadn't seen in like 20 odd years.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh yeah, I remember this comic. There's one bit where there's a team of them, and every story's got like focus on a single character or a couple. And there's one where they're in the I can't remember what the jungles they're in, but they get captured, and one of them who has to fight for their life is a character called Lifeline, who's like the medic.
God, he's an absolute, yeah.
He's an absolute pacifist and won't hurt or injure anyone, but he's the master. They think he's going to get slaughtered in this hand-to-hand combat, but he's a master of Aikido. So not laying his hands on them, he just sort of like whacks them aside and absolutely defeats the other person.
That was the thing about that really old, well, sort of G.I. Joe sort of strips. It's like people thought, oh, they're just toy franchises, but they were genuinely well thought out stories and quite gritty sometimes, like proper, you know, people died and like got their asses kicked all the time in that.
Was that one about the Snake Eyes character, why everyone sort of liked him? There's a bit where like he serves in Vietnam and gets like his face blown off, and he turns up at the airport, and there's a sequence where obviously the American GIs coming back got no love, but like all the family and friends are there to meet all the people he's with. And it starts off one panel, there's like a big family around an individual. The next one, it's a bit smaller, it's like a guy and his wife. And then the next one is sort of like an empty panel with Snake Eyes on his own, and there's like there was no one to meet Snake Eyes. And it's like you can see sort of like they build up this like tragic, lonely character, and it's one of the ones that stuck around today as being like the one of the most popular of all of them.
Who wrote that? Who wrote that? Was that Larry Hammer?
I think it's Larry Hammer.
Yeah.
Who served? So he kind of knows his own.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever watched the Toys That Made Us on Netflix.
Yes.
They do one on G.I. Joe, and
it's
the only
great
way
episode.
They could. Yeah, they could make the run profitable was to have just a single colour on a figure, and that was Snake Eyes, which they just made all black. No paintings, just plastic, black plastic. And that was one of the most popular ones.
Yeah.
So, it's good stuff. I really recommend not only the comic, but that series on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if you can find reprints of this stuff anywhere, you know, check it out because it's quality comics.
Yeah,
it?
I've been looking to try and get some of the reprints. I mean, I bought a couple of the American trades of the older comics, but they're not the ones that I remember. They're like the older ones, and all the research and reading other wikis and databases, I can't seem to find the range in which I got into it. So I'll just have to keep slogging away.
Nice. I don't know how we're going to put a show note for that, but
just put link to the dodgy eBay. No, don't.
we'll find some links for some badass like examples of these comics, and we'll put them in the show notes.
So there's one with Michael Golden does like a backup strip to it, and his fucking energy on he's so on point with the detail in any way.
Yeah, but the characters have a sort of cartoony feel to them, but everything else is serious around it. That was one of the things I loved about the Nam. Oh, rereading the Nam is just an absolute joy.
But like all these vehicles he's drawing are fictional, but they look like they're real and have weight.
Yeah.
And I know that's one of his ethos of kind of being really on point with that kind of stuff. Mm. But like I said, it's like these kind of really cartoony characters, and they're sitting behind these massive detailed machine guns, like blowing up A-10s as they're flying around the sky. You bastard.
Quality. That was a good choice, Dan. I think I'm going to have to dig some of that stuff out, because I used to love reading those. My recommendation for this week, and I've got to say it, it's a book by Matt Garvey. Good old Matt Garvey. We mentioned him a couple of times this week. And we give him some stick, but we love him. But my recommendation is Red Rocket Comet. God, I'm obsessed with comics, that's what it is. And he's going to hold me up on that one, probably. But yeah, this is written by Matt Garvey, art by Graham Puttock and Andy W. Clift, our old pal. Cover and logo by Michael Rea. I hope I said that right. This one is a 44-page one-shot that flips between black and white art with small splashes of colour to full colour retro style action sequences that pretty much it's like they're ripped from a bygone era, if I'm being honest. This is a very dark book that pretty much centers around like guilt, regret, all those juicy subjects, and how sometimes like if you just like one bad action can curse you forever. It's got that kind of pulpy, grim sort of vibe as well. Like I say, it's one shot. I went in without any info apart from what the cover gives you, which looks like Gary Sinise has given up on his life. That's what the cover looks like. and basically, that's how I want people to sort of read this, but not with Gary Sinise giving up on his life. But basically, to go in depth is to ruin like the reveals, the layers, and the twists that the story takes. Because I didn't know anything about it. Matt very kindly sent us a copy of it here to read through, and I just devoured it. So I'm not going to give away any plot spoilers because I think that just enhances the reading of it. And quite a lot of twists happen during the course of the 44 pages. However, what I can say is this, right? Like, firstly, the art choices are hugely interesting, to say the least. Now Graham's style is like ultra realistic, like black and white. It brought to mind the work of like Tim Bradstreet. You know Tim Bradstreet?
Yep.
For those,
the Punisher
those,
covers.
Yeah, the Punisher covers, the Punisher Max covers. He did a lot of other. I've got one of his art books as well. Beautiful stuff. Quite ultra realistic. Very heavy on shadows and stuff. And so Graham's work, like black and white work, sort of reminded me of that. Which it really lends itself well to the sort of grittier, sort of grimmer side of the story, which is set in the current time, where the washed up hero's past comes back to haunt him. It's very much photo referenced in places, which caught me sort of unawares, with the likes of Gary Sinise and Max von Sydow very much unashamedly on display. But I mean, personally, I preferred it when the artwork stepped away from the photo approach, which it very much does so in the latter stages of the tale. And I think that's because like that sort of style can be fun, and it, I must admit, it did bring a smile to my face when I recognised people within the book. But sometimes when it's done a bit too much, it could potentially detract from the story, because like, you know, you've got the visual reference to sort of in your face all the time. It didn't get to that level here, thankfully, but it's something I think sometimes folks should pay heed to if they've got that sort of realistic style, don't you think? Does that make sense? The artist for the retro flashbacks is the mighty Andy Clift, who once again demonstrates that if you want to make a comic in the classic Silver Age style, which is full of action and fun, there's only one person to turn to, let's be honest. He's having a killer year, is Andy. There's some wonderful sort of hero and villain sort of action, but laced with some darkness I haven't seen in his work before. And it made me think that I really want to see him take on like a classic monsters style story, you know, like give us an EC style like Andy Clift story of grim horror. You know, I'd love to see him take on that. I mean, he's a bubbly person, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, but I want to see him do something really grim, and based on some of the stuff he does in this story, he's definitely got the chops for it. So like the art is completely on point. But I do have to say that, in my opinion, this is Matt Garvey's best writing to date.
Yes. Oh, wow, nice.
Make a note of this minute, because this is the minute that I was nice to Matt Garvey. God bless him. but the writing was so good, I never once thought of his ugly chimp-like face once. I'm joking, of course. We love Matt on this show. But I will say that this one-shot is a real step up for someone who's consistently pushing what he's doing with his comics, and like he's always trying new ideas and stories no matter what genre. Like whenever he announces, oh, I've got this comic coming, I'm like, well, that came out of the blue. And, you know, I just, when you think you've got a handle on the sort of writing that Matt does, he'll put out something completely different, and I love that. So in this one, there's pulp, there's horror, there's classic superheroes, there's crime, it's just got everything. But most of all, it's really tightly written. And like all good one shots, it's got a really nice sting in its tail that I'm still thinking about it now. I think you will too. You'll think about it long after you've read it. It's getting a lot of good word on social media as well. A lot of people are spreading the word about it, and I'm going to be one of those people as well. So all in all, it's highly recommended. I think it's £5. And you can grab your copy from mattgarvey.bigcartel.com, along with the rest of his growing library of comics. The boy certainly knows how to sell a comic. But yeah, that's my recommendation this week.
Nice one.
Yeah, I'll send Matt my PayPal to pay me for the kind words. So no, I mean, all jokes aside, it's just great comics, and that's who doesn't want to read that, basically.
Exactly.
So there you go. Great comics, great, and lots of comic talk to start your week off, or end your week. I don't know when you listen to this. I don't know when do people listen to podcasts these days. But we hope you've enjoyed this episode, and thank you once again for joining us, Rick. It's been amazing.
Yeah, cheers, Rick.
It's all good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's been top fun, and we hope you enjoyed it and what we had to say about a lot of different subjects. If you want to find out more, then you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We also do our own comic, and we're putting it out at the moment. Where can you get our comic, Dan?
It's the Awesome Comic Pod Big Cartel. If you just do a Google search, that we put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Or awesome. Vince will put it in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks. Awesome Comics
and
1 and 2.
Issues, yeah, 1 and 2, both print and digital. Print's only £3 and digital's a pound.
Yes.
So get on that and get up to speed with Cockney Kung Fu, Murder House, and Viper.
It's absurd, it's crude, but come on, people, you'll love it. And
I almost said the wrong name, then that'd be embarrassing.
That would be terrible if you got my story wrong. Now, if you read them, please, we want your letters. This is a comic that has a letters section in it, so let us know what you think of the stories, or if you want to ask us any questions, and send those letters to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, because he's the editor of the letters page, God help us, but he's doing a good job. So yeah, definitely get hold of our comic, and if you do Twitter, follow us at The Awesome Pod. Well, we'll be posting up the next guest and whoever's coming on next. We've got some, as always, we've got some great guests coming up and some great events, etc. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to talk about comics without someone hard selling you something all the time, then go to Awesome Comics Talk. There's some fantastic conversations going on there at the moment. The only thing I really post on there is when a new episode goes on. So most of the time I'm reading it all. Don't you find that, Dan?
Yeah. I kind of spend a lot of time reading and then thinking, oh, I'll respond to that, and actually I'll do it a bit later.
Yeah,
but I love reading it and seeing the kind of the debate back and forward.
Yeah, we love the post that you guys do on that, and it's great stuff, so keep it coming.
We have to get the old reading group going again.
Oh god, well, Sam Webster is still doing it. He did one recently, so if you want to do a weekly reading group, just stay tuned.
If Sam wants to do another one, get another title going, I'm on board for that.
Oh, hear that, Sam? He'll take you up on that, you know he will. So, yeah. But thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, be our friend, and all of that. We love friends. it was a good show at the time. I mean, you know, there's some plot lines I could have done without. But anyway, as we said...
A little now.
Yeah.
As we said.
Yeah. As we said, you can listen to us on Spotify. So if you found us there, thank you very much. We're also on lots of different networks. We're on the Stitcher Network, we're on the Podnose Network, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Dan?
Pod Spain.
Touché. I tell you what, Tony makes it look easy.
He does.
And we do miss you, Tony.
I hope he took your advice about putting the old suntan lotion on the...
Oh yeah,
on his Bobby's helmet.
I'm sure we'll be hearing a story about that next week.
Or two, yeah.
Yes. So look forward to Tony returning and some awesome guests next week. And thank you very much for listening. Now, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony, oh, he's not here, but you can find him at Ezo Yes, and go to neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. Because that's a cracking weekly read.
Yeah, he's a fantastic reviewer, Tony.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Yeah,
there's so many times he's reviewed stuff on here, and he's shone a light on something I didn't necessarily pick up, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's really interesting.
And if he visits an event, he puts a very thoughtful sort of review. Well, not a report of it. You know, all of Tony's writing. I mean, we always joke about him when he's on the show, but in all seriousness, Tony genuinely thinks about what he's writing before posting it, you know.
Because when he does reviews, he doesn't do what a lot of them say, like, oh, here's the story, and just recap a synopsis of the story. It's like, well, that's not a review in my eyes.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, I've lost count the amount of times that I read a review and I thought, bloody hell, he's used a lot of big words. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
You know, so never judge a book by his face.
By the hairy cover.
Oh, that's his intro for next week sorted. Brilliant. But where can people find you online, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and we can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Brilliant. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmassfrommars.com. And Rick, once again, thank you for joining us. Where can people find all of your books, etc.?
Cool. Well, you can read all my stuff at rickjackson.co.uk, and you can follow me on Twitter at GoJacksonGo.
Nice.
Like that one.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good handle.
Do you get that, what I did, the annoying thing of saying, I'm sorry, Rick Jackson? Do you get that a lot? Because...
Yeah, fuck off, Dan. Thanks. You just fucking ruined the last 2 fucking hours. This was going so well, and then you had to stick that in.
Yeah. Come on, Dan.
Every day.
He's for real. That. You know that.
I didn't actually make the joke. I just like, do people make that joke? Obviously they do. Bit of a sore point.
Well, so, people like you, who've just done it now. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. That's
on
pretty
that
much,
bombshell.
Yeah, on that bombshell. On that bombshell. Have a brilliant week, folks. Thanks for listening. Read Legend Comics. Have a great week. And from Dan, Rick and myself, stay awesome. See ya.
Yeah, see you later.
So I mean, I don't know if you guys know, but I've recently just had another baby, so we're up to three now.
I always thought you were a bloke.
Well, funny you should say that.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
That's worse than mine.
Fuck off, Dan. At least I didn't see Dan's coming, but there we go.
You never do, trust me.